is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Brian D'Oliveira, and I'm just really looking forward to talking with you about this incredible soundtrack that you made for Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Tomb Raider is like my all-time favorite franchise, and this game is just phenomenal, and it's largely thanks to your music. So it's great to have a chance to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
From what I understand, you were approached by Eidos because you have this deep, deep knowledge of pre-Hispanic music from Mexico and Latin America and South America. And I'm sure, you know, you must have heard that music while you were living in these amazing places. But what was it that really got you into delving deeper and becoming kind of the go-to guy for this music?
It's part of my heritage. So my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, he's also Amerindian. So it was always a deep part of me, you could say. The thing was that for many years, I always felt a very deep connection when I was in certain places. For example, I was very lucky to have grown up in the Andes Mountains in Venezuela. And even visiting other places in South America, which I've traveled extensively, being in places like Peru, I felt that connection again very strongly, and I naturally gravitated towards that music. It's definitely a huge part of who I am as a person. It's ingrained into me, you could say. And even more so, like, I'm fascinated with the history and the richness of the culture and the sound that existed. And you know, even when I was a kid, I would imagine what it would have been like to live in these cultures, if the Spaniards had not come and conquered and destroyed it all, what life would have been now in this present moment if these cultures had actually been left to develop just like we have all the rest in the world.
Wow, that's so fascinating. And you know, the thing that we're commonly taught in music history is that there really is no way to know what the music of the Aztecs and the Maya sounded like, and yet you have found, I guess, going back to some of the really ancient instruments, you've kind of put together what that might have sounded like.
Yes, I did my due diligence, and because I did not want to just imagine and appropriate what was available and just come up with something that was superficially representative, I wanted to be as close to the source as possible. And I did take a lot of time. I did a lot of research while starting on the project. And then I also contacted a lot of archaeologists and people that were doing the research for many, many years before me. I had to give them credit. They've been doing an amazing job. So I was lucky enough that I found the right people, even instrument makers that had been studying or doing recreations of those and figuring out how the sounds were being produced and why they were making these instruments as well. So I was lucky enough that I was able to go to Mexico and spend some time with them. I even learned how to make instruments with some of them so that I could also get into the state of mind and understand a bit more of what it was like to be part of this musical culture. And I was lucky enough to also go to the National Institute of the Disc, it's called there, which is basically, they had records of all the studies from archaeologists and anthropologists trying to retrace the steps and the remnants of this music and trying to make sense of it. So I spent a lot of time, like literally days, just listening to these recordings and studies that have been done throughout the last few decades to try to make sense of what really the music was like. So some of the early discussions, one of the big ones was, recreating the pre-Hispanic music. And they wanted me to make music. The specific agenda, sort of mission I was given, was to make the music as if these cultures had kept on going on. What would the music sound like nowadays? What would have been the evolution of that sound?
that is just so fascinating. And I was curious about when Eidos approached you, what were those early conversations like to kind of get a sense of, you know, sort of the big picture of the role the music would play and then kind of the overall sound? It must have taken like a few conversations, I would think.
Actually, there was one major conversation, and the first one was they actually showed me just a concept art, and one that's, you know, there was a couple that stood out to me. One was a shot of Lara in the middle of the jungle, you know, up to her waist in water, going through it, and there was this idea of darkness. They wanted to get this sort of darker texture for the world that she was going into, because the jungle, you know, embodied that basically. It was the embodiment of this darkness of the unknown. And then the other was a picture of Paititi, a large shot of, you know, of the city from far. And my imagination just ran wild, because right away I saw so many possibilities. And they gave me, in a sense, it was very focused, but they knew that this was my thing. So they gave me a lot of open space to be able to work my magic and really dive deep. I'm very lucky, because the audio director, Rob Bridget, he had a very clear vision. And in a sense, we were, you know, he was my musical collaborator as well. We were both doing this together, even though I was the one executing it. He was kind of like my spirit guide in the world of Lara Croft.
Oh, that is so cool. And what's neat too, is that it sounds like you had 3 years to work with the team and put this music together. And that's so great, because a lot of composers get brought in at the last minute and they don't have the time to experiment or really settle the sound of the music as the game is being built. So that must have been a real advantage too.
Yeah, I've fallen in love with the process. I really like being able to dig deep and spend years. And to me, it's just it's like the equivalent of doing a university thesis, you know, in a sense. Like, I went just as deep, and, you know, my final thesis, instead of a written one, was the music that you hear in the game, basically.
Thank you. I really want to talk with you about your musical safari to Mexico, because it just sounds like it was an incredible, incredible experience. And somebody said that ancient instruments have really kind of grown out of the environment where they are. And that really seems to be true with these instruments too, especially with the drums and the flutes and all of those. So once you got to Mexico, you mentioned that you had some contacts. So did you just kind of leave yourself open to what they would show you and what you would find?
Yes, in a sense, I did arrive and I did not know what to expect. I mean, I had talked to them. I'm very lucky because my Spanish is perfect. I know how to roll in these environments. I could go deep into any place in South America and nobody will even notice me because I look like one of the locals. And even, I can even emulate different accents. So people did not even realize that I was not, that I was a somebody from Canada, which is really nice. And the other thing too is that the beautiful thing about music is that it opens doors that you would never imagine. And this is an ongoing theme in my life, which I love. Because of these musical connections, I get to experience and see things that nobody else would. And so when I arrived, as soon as people got to know a little bit of more of what I was about and the mission that I was on, when I told them, hey, I'm making music for a video game and, this is going to be in a video game, they got fascinated. They were so enthusiastic. And yeah, I got to spend a lot of time with them. And the big realization, going back to your idea of your statement of how the instruments come from the environment, the biggest lesson for me was learning the pre-Hispanic state of mind. So the biggest thing for them was that the instruments were the embodiment of nature, of the forces of nature, of the birds and animals around them. And that the sounds that they were creating, they didn't look at music in the same manner as we look at music today, as it being just a form. To them, it was an intrinsic part of their daily rituals and lives. So it was just a part of what they would do in their lives. And it was almost like they were sound designing their lives, actually.
That is so cool.
So there was when I discovered that, it already, had explosions of creativity in my head, because I realized that this was the state of mind that I had to take to make the music. And the beautiful thing about the idea that Rob Bridget at Eidos, my audio director, he already wanted to blur the lines between sound design and music, and you know, be able to play with both, so that music could be sound design elements and vice versa. So it was a perfect fit. It was actually a match made in heaven. It took actually many months, like even after coming back from my trip in Mexico, having the instruments, to really understand that and then get into the state of mind where I become, in a sense, a medium to the music and to the intent. And so when I performed the music, there was no plan. It was more the intent that would be expressed in the music.
I was going to ask you how much of the music was written down for these instruments and how much was improvised, because many, many of the tracks where you've used these ancient and really unique instruments just sound like it's just coming right out of your head through the instruments. So is that really the case? They were just
yes.
a lot
it's
of improvisation.
100% improvised on the spot. And one thing that I played with, as you can hear some of the tracks, there's a very complex polyrhythmical elements that come in and out, but that are non-repetitive as well. So that's one technique that I used, you know, in a sense, like I had understood some of the basic rhythms and patterns from dances that had survived throughout the ages. I could still make sense of that. And then I created, this is in a sense my own creation, because I took it to the next level, you could say, by creating complexity out of these simple motifs and rhythms. And all of that was improvised on the spot. I mean, I play about 95% of the instruments you hear on the soundtrack.
That's incredible. And that must have made it great for the folks at Eidos to implement the music, because, you know, you have to be able to cover however long it takes Lara to get through an area. Right now, I've got her stuck fighting a jaguar and it's not going well. And so, you know, to be able to do that in such a unique way with a polyrhythm so that it doesn't repeat, the music isn't going to get old as you're going through these areas.
Exactly. They would. So because it's everything is performed live, so I had a couple creative restraints that I set on myself. So the music had to be performed live from the very beginning of the sequence or the song, let's call it, to the end. So everything is played once for the most part. There's no extensive editing done at all, actually. There's very minimal editing. Each track was just done live on the spot, on the go. And then when I was making the music, I was also thinking of the interactivity and them working with stems in ways so that they can recombine the music. So I made it so that with these polyrhythms, they could combine it in just displace or you know, displace the loops and just use different variations, then it would get literally infinite variations out of the same piece.
It's fascinating. And as I'm playing the game, there really is very little distinction between the sound design and the music. The music is just such an organic part of that world. So It's a fabulous, I mean, everybody did their job exactly right because the end result is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, yeah. So how many instruments did you end up bringing back to Montreal?
You could say at least close to a couple hundred, actually, because I had a lot of them were small instruments made of clay, and I had a couple suitcases just filled with them. And then, yeah, numerous drums and teponazlis, which are these Aztec log drums, as well as a large huehuetl and, you know, Mayan horns, all kinds of death whistles and, you know, flutes, a lot of recreations. I was lucky enough that I found two makers that they specialize in this, and they've devoted their lives to finding the real instruments and then doing authentic recreations of these instruments. So most of my instruments come from them, at least the clay ones. And actually all of them, because there were other makers that I found through them. So I discovered this hidden town where the tradition there has become it's, although it's relatively new, it was full of makers, of luthiers that make pre-Hispanic instruments. That's what the town is about, actually, surprisingly.
That's fascinating. And you found a shaman to make you a really unique sounding stringed instrument.
Yeah, that was from a previous trip and that was in Peru as well, and deep in the Amazon in Peru. So I had gone off to do ayahuasca, he had made me he'd actually invented this instrument. It's called the arco de duende, which is basically it's an arc made of wood that looks like a snake, and it has strings, and you use your mouth as a resonator. You just, you know, you hit the strings or strum them, and when you move your mouth, which is in contact with this instrument, you're able to get, you know, something in between a harp and a jaw harp, basically.
Wow, that's amazing. And so what was the learning curve like to play these instruments? Were any of them like a real challenge to figure out how to play?
To be honest, it was very natural for me. When I picked up the instruments, I could play them almost instantly. It was actually surprising for me, and even the people that were around me when you know, I spent time with them, they were kind of surprised as well, because it just felt very natural. And right away I was able to do what they did, and then also I'm very lucky because I've studied music from all over the world, so it's not just pre-Hispanic music that I've been immersed in. I've studied everything from ancient Baroque European Baroque music to complex Indian polyrhythms and scales as well. So I was able to incorporate a lot of different subtle elements from other parts of the world as well. At least I had that tool set available so that I could come up with my own interpretations of this music as well.
that's amazing. And I'd love to know more about those rocks, those volcanic rocks, because apparently the fact that you wanted them and you took them kind of surprised the people that you were with, because I guess they thought they were just rocks, right?
Well, that is a funny story. I actually found it in that specific village I mentioned, that where they were making prehispanic music, and I'd heard about these fabled, you know, musical rocks, and I went hunting. That's how I actually found that town to begin with. And then when I arrived in the town, I kept asking people, and I ended up in equivalent of a back alley, which was literally at the end of the village, in this middle of the road, you know, just dirt road with this little house. And it was this little showroom with a bunch of rocks and this old man that sold them. And my helper at the time, you know, she thought I was already crazy. But when I took these rocks and we were lifting them back, which they were extremely, extremely heavy, she was swearing at me. She's like, Pichas Piedras, like, what are you doing? Like, what's this? You're going to use them on a video game?
Well, they do. If I'm guessing right on the cue, they do have an incredible sound. I think you can hear them in cenote.
Yes.
There's some tapping. Yeah. That is an amazing cue, because all of these instruments are kind of gathered together, and it's so sinister and menacing sounding, and really gives it just an incredible sense of the environment.
Yeah. And I was even surprised myself. Like, this is the kind of thing that you just can't recreate using normal work methodologies. Yeah. You really need, like, the, you know, there was like one thing was getting the instruments, and then also having had the experience of meeting the people that had made these instruments and, you know, even eating the food and you know, immerse myself in that world. That's what allowed me to, when I came back, to get into the right state of mind and then let the creativity just flow.
Yeah, it's just such an amazing sound. And we've touched just a little bit on Western instruments, and you've got this amazing Baroque cello, and that became kind of the sound of Lara, right? That's sort
Yeah.
of one of the sounds of her, yeah.
Yeah. So another thing that I've been seriously studying for the last several years has been ancient music of Europe, and specifically, I was lucky enough to acquire a 1780 cello from that time, and I've been playing a lot of early Baroque music from the Italian composers as well as German composers. So I really. This has also, in a sense, been a huge process that I've been internalizing for many years. So when it came to also representing that side of the colonialism, let's call it, and the ancient European influences that were part of the game, it actually came very naturally for me.
Yeah, it's really wonderful how you've fused them, and that duality is an aspect of, you know, all of the Tomb Raider games. Here are these ancient ruins and ancient cultures, and then Lara comes in with modern equipment and modern ideas, and it's really fascinating the way you kind of fused both of them in the Q Trinity Pursuit, because we've got this string sound, European string sound, and then all these amazing ethnic instruments.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and that was definitely a process because like I'd mentioned before, I didn't want to just be appropriating and just, you know, throwing things one thing on top of another and, you know, without any real depth or thought. So for example, Trinity Pursuit, that was actually one of the first pieces that I did. But when you hear the final version, actually, I went back to it with the kind of new eyes after having gone through this process, since I'd started this cube before I went to Mexico, and it really came together then because I was just it, all the extra little elements that you hear it was almost like they were waiting to be brought out, and yeah, it's when I finally got to this point, it was seamless, and my idea with this is that you could still make out each element. Each of these sort of cultural elements in their own, you can make sense of it, but you could hear it, but you can also feel the these worlds clashing at the same time within the music also.
it works so well. And what I really love about this trio of the new Tomb Raider games is that Lara is portrayed as a much more complex character. And especially in Shadow of the Tomb Raider now, she's actually got some doubts about whether or not raiding tombs is a good idea and messing with ancient cultures. And there's one cue, I think, that just... it's so moving. It's Lara's dream. And it's, first of all, it's a gorgeous piece of chamber music. And she's scaling her house, her manor house, as a child. It's kind of a flashback. But it's just such a great representation of, I guess, kind of the world she grew up in, maybe before she started having doubts.
Yeah, and that was interesting because it was completely the other spectrum of sound and influence than what I've been immersed in. Even the people at Eidos, even Rob, was, he knew that I could, you know, that I could go there, but we were all surprised at the results, because it also came about so instant, actually, and basically those were all composed in about a couple of weeks, and everything was composed in the same manner, that where it would, all the lines were improvised on the spot, played live, and it just came together very seamlessly as well. So yeah, I think there's a magic to, I'm very lucky that I got to work with such a deep character, because I feel that once I got into the state of mind of her world, everything just flowed, actually.
Yeah, and Eidos gave you some amazing cutscenes to score too. There's another one where Lara has just and her companion Jonah have just experienced devastating fires and floods, and Jonah wants to stay and help the villagers, and Lara is just so single-minded and wants to go after this artifact that she has just lost. And again, it's a very moving moment in the game, and to be able to score moments like that and action like that must be just really satisfying.
Yeah, that, I had to give credit to, again, to my audio director, Rob Bridget, because he really pushed me to go there and in that in the, like and really push the boundaries of what I do as a composer. And yeah, I've even surprised myself that I could get into that depth of, although emotional music is definitely one of my strengths, I'd been in a state of mind of more action when I was scoring for that specific cinematic, and you know, the shift of state of mind while doing it, it's came up with good results as well. I'm very proud of those as well.
Oh yeah, well it's fantastic to have such amazing material to work with. Your studio, La Hacienda Creative, just looks like an amazing place to work and just be part of. So when you've got the music pretty well organized, or at least in your head you have a plan, do you have musicians on call that you bring in to help supplement your performances on the soundtrack?
Yeah, although with, yes, we do. And so, and that's something that I've been working on the last several years. So I created the space with the idea that it was a creative space without any boundaries, and we would have as many resources as possible. That's why, you know, we have over 900 instruments at this point. I laugh because sometimes I can't believe it myself as well. The main studio was built in 1942, our main room. It's the original RCA Victor recording space that was built back then, and it's in its full original state, actually. So I actually moved in like when I just started, just a bit after I started Tomb Raider, we moved into the space, and I started using the room also as an instrument in itself. The space was built with that in mind. It was built designed to be to resonate like a musical instrument, and yeah, I grew a lot because I'd never, these days we're not used to using acoustic spaces as much. Everybody's used to recording their instruments and sounds, you know, as dead as can be, and then they're adding reverb after the fact. Whereas I learned with what you hear in the soundtrack, a lot of it is what you hear is what you get. We barely actually even added any kind of processing or reverb. It's actually the room sound, and we're I perform the instruments in the room with that specific sound, and that's what was printed on, you know, on tape, literally.
That studio is amazing because it's got those wonderful curved wooden panels. So it must be like being inside a cello or a timpani or just some amazing, or boat maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually designed specifically like that, to resonate like a musical instrument.
Wow, that is just so cool. You know, you mentioned that so much of the inspiration was pre-Hispanic music, and yet there's one track on the soundtrack, The Chosen, that to me sounds like the kind of music Spanish musicians would have written once they got to the New World and they heard the music around them. And I don't know if that was your intent, but that's how
that's amazing. I'm so happy that's how you felt it, because that's exactly how I wrote it. I'm lucky enough that I do have Baroque music and medieval music. I immerse myself in it quite a fair bit as well. So it was already a language that I'm comfortable in. But then I basically just accessed both sides of the work that I was doing, and I let the inspiration flow, and that's what came out. And it was composed in exactly the same way that I composed all the other music. It was on the spot. Even the vocal melody, that was all one take. I literally just wrote the words down, sang it once, and then layered it. That was it.
Well, that would explain how you were able to get so much music done in the time you had. I mean, 3 years sounds like a lot of time, but I'll bet given the massive task, it went by really fast.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, we had a lot of deadlines, and constantly we'd have to just come up. The music that it was being made, as soon as it was made, it was being put into the game and being implemented, and we wouldn't be able to look back. It was just, you know, looking forward, next. So yeah, this process allowed, it was lucky for all sides, because we knew that we were giving something that we were happy with, and then on the Ido side, they had finished work, but you know, if they liked what was there, they would just have it ready to be implemented.
Wow, that is so cool. And the whole thing just sounds like a massive adventure and a huge amount of fun. But are there any moments that like really stand out in the process where you were either pleasantly surprised or just so happy that you really nailed that one?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel that the last 6 months were a combination of all the hard work that I did in developing and in researching, and then it was just pure execution. And you know, certain scenes, certain parts, the levels of the game, like that, you know, the last few levels, they were just being done at such a quick pace. But at the same time, there was a magic to it. You know, it was almost like I had I wouldn't even have time to plan the music or think about it. I would just have to arrive, look at the scene, and get on to making the music on the spot. So, you know, it would just flow, and everything was working pretty seamlessly. So, yeah, I gotta say that getting to that, reaching that state of mind, it's been life-changing for me.
Well, now you've got, it sounds like a huge sample library, except that they're all real instruments. So, do you think you're going to be able to repurpose them for a future project?
Yeah, the sounds that they can generate, that's the beautiful thing about acoustic instruments and the space that I have available. You can get infinite variety of sounds. And for example, I've been doing, you know, even a couple of sci-fi projects where I've repurposed the instruments, and just with a, you know, some tweaking and some effects, they sound completely alien and huge in their own way. So that's been interesting, being able to shift complete states of mind and then having still these physical instruments that have unlocked potential in them.
Yeah, I'll bet. And hopefully you'll find another use for those Aztec death whistles too, because that's too good a sound to just leave on the table, right?
Yeah, there definitely are. And The nice thing is that they're instruments, but they're also sound effect instruments. So they're going to be invaluable going in the future. But also, I'm not sure if other people will be able to use it as much because of, I'm pretty much, at a certain point, you can hear swarms of them. I must have at least, 50 of them going at the same time at certain points.
That's amazing. Well, I just love that, you could get one online, but I love the fact that you went to the source and got all of these really, really special, amazing things. And Brian, it's been so much fun talking with you about this. It's just an incredible score. And thank you so much for taking some time to talk about it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure.